Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. And joining me today, of course, it's Tuesday, Martin. Martin, did the deep freeze hit Monroe, Louisiana?
Oh, Lord, it's colder now than it ever was over the winter. I was in North Carolina this weekend at a waterfowl weekend at a store there, and they had the something regional qualifying duck calling competition and all kinds of stuff there. So I got to listen to kee. I'm like, oh my goodness. That kind of stuff just drives me up the wall, but that's another time and another place. And when we left North Carolina, it was like 60 degrees or something like that. When I got back to Monroe, it was like 37, 20 mile an hour north wind and raining. I said, good grief, it's cold. I was trying to figure out if this was March or if this was freaking January. I didn't know what the, I was cold, man, but. Oh, the biggest bummer is the fish just started acting somewhat normal, and then they're like, no, here, take that. Mother Nature's like, no, y'all slow down a little bit. So,
well, whew. I saw, it looked like y'all were in a video, you and your wife, in an airport.
Stuck in airports. Yeah, we got stuck in airports in Dallas, and then had to sit on the runway for a little while waiting for weather to clear, and I swear, flying back home from there, it was, we had to go around them big bad storms, which, you know, I'll take this time right now for any of you boys in lower Alabama and Georgia that may be listening to this that got caught up in that bad weather. Man, our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to you guys. Them tornadoes went through there and destroyed a lot of people's stuff. And, you know, that's a bad deal. So, and we had to fly all the way around it. So I swear we flew up to like Iowa and turned and come straight down on Dallas or something. It was, I've never had it take 3 hours to get from North Carolina to Texas. So it was, oh man, it was one bumpy ride. I know that. Goodness. But you know, men our stature and one of them airplanes and a bumpy ride, my kneecaps are bruised from hitting the back of that seat in front of me.
Man, I know, I feel you on that one, I promise.
Man, I'm telling you, it's just, you know, it'd be nice to ride up there in the big seats, but hey, we still work for a living, so anybody got time for that?
You know, at that 20, I think it was 23 people lost in Alabama. That's unreal.
Man, that thing. Yeah, the guy, I reached out to the mayor of Eufaula, Alabama, because I saw that he posted on there, and a couple of years ago, he hosted us on a little fishing deal down there where he took us to some private lakes and we caught a bunch of bass and had fun and got to basically get tutorials on hummingbird electronics that are made right there, which was pretty cool. And, you know, I reached out to him asking if there was anything we could do. And he said he was going to get us a supply list together that we'd make it box up and send if we wanted to. So, you know, we're going to do that as a company. We're going to box up some, I'm sure, diapers and just stuff you don't really think about, underwear and stuff like that, to help get people back on their feet and send down there to them. And, you know, Lord's blessed us far beyond what we deserve. So when we can help, and, you know, in times in the past when hurricanes and floods have hit here, people from Alabama and all through there have always come over here to lend a helping hand. So it's the least we can do is send stuff down there to them, you know. So we're going, it's just people loving on people, man. That's all we're trying to do.
I think I saw where the winds of that tornado were, according to the Doppler or the radar that they use, 180 miles an hour, and that thing was almost a mile wide.
Yeah, that thing cut a swath through there, all them videos. Man, them big old trees. I spent a week there last summer, so I know what it tore up like. I mean, I remember driving through there and to snap them big old trees like toothpicks, man. That thing is, I'm telling you, you don't want to, there's a lot of stuff that we do that can fool with you, but you don't want to fool with Mother Nature, man. Wind, water, all that stuff's more powerful than anything we can do. So it's crazy.
Well, changing the subject on you, I don't guess that Monroe, Louisiana, West Monroe has a Mardi Gras parade, do they?
Oh, we do. We generally do it like 2 or 3 weeks before the big ones down south. It ain't nothing like that. You know, it ain't nothing like you get down there in New Orleans Lafayette. Ours starts before dark is even thought about. And if you get on the right end of it, you can be home before dark. You know, we try to do Mardi Gras as quick and as painless as you can up here. But
I saw a girl that I'm friends with on social media, but she got wrapped around the head with some beads and she hadn't been able to see out of one of her eyes. That's not funny.
It
hurt that bad, but man, that's a sight to behold in many ways.
Oh Lord. About 3 or 4 years ago, I was at the one here and I had a buddy of mine's kids on my shoulders up there, because I'm taller than everybody else around here. And some old boy, I guess, thought he was going to be funny and threw me a fastball with a set of beads that had like a dartboard on the end of them. And that thing hit me right across the bridge of my nose. My nose bled for 3 days over that thing. Cracked me right across. Looked like I'd been in one of them MMA fights where just the bridge of my nose split wide open. And you know how bad that spot bleeds, man. It just, that thing wouldn't quit bleeding. I remember getting, I was like, I'm hit.
Man.
I had that 4-year-old on my shoulders. I was like, if I take this kid, man, I got blood going everywhere. the things you do for kids, man.
Two tender spots, man. You know where one of them is, and the other one's the bridge of the nose.
Man, I'm telling you, that thing cracked me right across there. I was like, golly. I remember it made my eyes water. It hit me so hard. And I was like, okay, all right, okay. I was thinking
right
you really felt
that,
like.
Yeah. Ooh.
I remember thinking, you'd have felt like something if I'd have dropped this kid off my shoulders because he's going to be funny. You know, like, you sorry, sucker. Whatever. I hope
maybe
they got a good laugh out of that.
Maybe he was your least favorite character. You were his least favorite character on Duck Dynasty.
He may have been one of them public land boys from Arkansas, upset that our people come up there or something. He may have come got on the float for retaliation. You know, you can't ever tell.
No. Well, Martin, today is a sad day, but it's a good day. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I mean, you're moving to the Hall of Fame and the great throne of wisdom with 5 or 6 other people. So be called on every once in a while, once or twice a month, to talk on expertise on different topics, and that's a good thing. But the last chapter of becoming Martin, I'm kind of excited. I'm excited and kind of sad about it, because you get, like I told you, man, you get used to people and you get used to them being on here. You just get comfortable, and it's easy to do when you get comfortable with somebody.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. You know, when Bradley Ramsey first reached out to me about this, I was like, huh? At the time, I didn't really understand what podcasts were. You know, I mean, in fairness, I just wasn't something I'd ever researched and, you know, never really thought much about them. And man, as it's going on, I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, the thing I really enjoy, you know, talking to you, getting to know you, and then just the interaction with the people that are listening to it has been really cool, because they've been quick to send messages on encouragement and, you know, thanks and praise, and then also just with just general questions, you know. And you know, anytime you can do something like that helps people out and, you know, kind of get you back involved with people, man, I just enjoy that, you know. Something that, you know, you miss when you don't have that, I guess it's just kind of a weird feeling, because, you know, before Duck Dynasty, we had that. We were answering all the customer service emails ourselves, and the how-tos and this, that, the other. And then when the show blew up, we just simply didn't have time. So now that we have the time again and people are starting to do that again, man, just it makes you, you know, it's kind of a full circle deal, and it's kind of cool to go back to that setting and really get to get in there and talk with the hunters and the people that are buying your stuff and the people, you know, just the general public, man. And I really do enjoy it, and thankful for the opportunity that this thing has brought me. So that's awesome.
Well, the end. And look, we're going to cover three different topics today, three main topics. So just to give everybody a heads up on what we're going to be talking about, we'll talk about the end of the Duck Dynasty, where Martin is today. Because some of you that's listening to this, I don't even think you know the position that Martin holds there at Duck Commander now. So it's pretty interesting. And I got a surprise topic for Martin to end with today. But Martin, Duck Dynasty. You saw the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm sure you guys had meetings on it and said, hey, because I think as a fan and as a viewer, the show was so good. And you're kind of like Michael Jordan quitting at his peak. That's what Duck Dynasty did. What were those talks and conversations behind closed doors? What were they like to say, hey, you know, it's time?
Yeah, well, we had, even before the very last season, we had voiced our concerns to the network and everything, basically because we were running out of real life scenarios for us, and they were starting to try to put us in other people's real life scenarios. So, and if you're if you're a knowledgeable audience, you can tell when they put us in something that we hadn't necessarily been in, but knew that was a part of humanity, but we didn't know how to navigate through that, A, because we hadn't been in there, and B, because we're not actors. So, you know, there were some of them that you can tell were a little more forced than others, and we were like, man, this isn't us. This isn't what we want to do. This isn't what we want to represent. And quite frankly, we don't have the talent. So we don't want this thing to go on and spiral down and to nothing, and everybody remember you as a joke because you tried to hold on to the fame and celebrity of what all was going on. So when we started voicing that, they were like, you know what? You guys are exactly right. Let's get you one more season. Let's go out on a high note and we'll call it good. And that's what they did. And, you know, because we were still under contract for more than that. So the fact that they, you know, recognized it and acknowledged our concerns and all that, we were thankful for. And to be honest, just 110% honest, everybody here was tired. And you know, people listening to this probably like, tired? What are you talking about? Y'all just, until you've done a full-blown Hollywood television production, you can only speculate on what it's like. Because I remember thinking before this, like, man, those guys have the best gig ever, you know. Dude, I mean, tell you something, that crap runs you ragged. Between the working 5 days a week, 10 to 12 hour days on the film, and then for us, what we really want to do is get out there and speak on the weekends and share the message. So we always did that. So when you're talking about working that, go speak on weekends and get home late Sunday night, because Monroe's got about three flights you can get home on. and you wake up Monday and you're doing it all over again, eventually you just get tired, man. And we all needed to recharge our batteries. We needed to, you know, reinvest in our families and just, you know, stuff that you kind of take for granted when you don't have that hectic of a schedule. So, man, it was nice, you know.
If you had to rank it, who was the most glad that it was kind of over? Not glad from just a bitterness of sick of doing it, just glad they're getting a breather.
Oh, that's easy. Phil Robertson. Because his deal, after about season five, he's like, I don't know about you boys. I made enough money. I'm good. Let's call it. We'll just call in the dogs and pee on the fire. Like, and we're all like, Phil, we're not 70. We still try to make money and make, you know, provide for everything. He's like, y'all don't need me then. I'm out. Without a doubt, Phil. And probably number two was actually Cy, because, you know, they, you know, it ain't hard to see. They used him. He was their little show pony, you know. So he had to work probably arguably twice as hard as the rest of us. So, but the rest of us were glad and were thankful. And, you know, there was just something missing about us. Yes, we're spending a lot of time together, but you were missing that quote unquote duck call room time, just the time where we really are invested in each other's lives like we used to be, you know. So, you just, things that you don't think about, man, that you would never think about, and certainly things that you don't necessarily think you would miss, you end up missing, and you're like, man, I just really need that, you know. You need that fellowship, you need that deal that when you've got a microphone on you and, you know, you can't take a leak in private, that you don't have. And, you know, every time now, you know, when I get up to go pee, I'm like, man, I don't even turn my microphone off. Still, I mean, some of that stuff still crosses my mind, like, and it's, you just don't realize it. And, you know, thankful for it to all come to a good, agreeable end where there wasn't no nasty contract disputes or nothing like that. Thankful they were willing to let us walk when we all decided it was a good idea to walk.
Hey, I'm just asking from a totally dumb about TV production perspective. How do contracts work with people like y'all that had never had a show like that on a national broadcast? I don't know what you specifically call it, but how does a contract like that work with somebody new coming into a show like that? It blows up, and then you've got reruns going today.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get into the numbers because that's none of my business or anybody listening to this, but do you still have a little bit of the financially invested in even the reruns? I'm just asking from a production perspective.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So once you hit, so your original contract, which is why you hire agents and all that kind of good stuff, we tried to do it at first by ourselves and realized how much we were getting taken advantage of, because we had done contracts, endorsement contracts, you know, but we had never done TV contracts. So they try to get you for everything. And unfortunately for a lot of people in this world, they do get them because they're so hungry and starving for fame and attention. They'll sign anything that you put in front of them. And thank goodness for us, that wasn't necessarily the case. But you hire your agents and you tell them what you're willing to do and what you want. And whatever number is agreed upon for syndication, most of the time it's like 100 episodes equals syndication rights. Once you reach syndication rights, then you negotiate a fee for every time it airs after that or whatever. And so now, even when it airs now, we still get paid. We get a quarterly check of, now not, let me tell you something, you don't go and retire off of it. But it is a nice little bonus check. I call it my vacation fund. That's kind of what me and my wife used to go on vacation every year. So, but you get a little bit of it. It's pennies compared to everything else that you did, but still, I mean, it's found income, and, you know, you put in the time back then working for it, and you cash in on it now. So, it's a good thing. They take care of you for working hard during the bulk of it. So,
I'll ask you this, Martin. Have you ever thought about it from this point of view? And I don't know if y'all have ever had this conversation. look, whenever you have good, wholesome shows that have a message that teach you something about life, the way that Duck Dynasty did, the way that the early episodes of Andy Griffith did, you know, those shows have staying power for a long time because there's a lesson in that show, and people will watch them. My kids will end up one of these days, you know, or their kids watching y'all shows. Have y'all ever thought about it from that point of view?
It's weird, you know, we have now that we look at it and how it airs. And, you know, like for me, you're talking about Andy Griffith. What's funny is every morning when I'm getting dressed to come to work, Andy Griffith is on. Because it's funny, I go to bed watching TV Land most of the nights. And, you know, I'm watching, whatever, 2.5 Men and King of Queens. And when I wake up and turn the TV back on, it's on the Andy Griffith show. So I sit down and watch an episode of it every morning before I leave to come to work. And you're right on things that's why, you know, you get these people today that get so bent out of shape about where the world is and what all's going on and this, that, the other. And I'm quick to point to the Bible, like, guys, this kind of crap's been going on since the beginning of time. So the fact that these lessons and the things that were taught in our shows that we tried to show are things that are going to perpetually happen from here to the good Lord comes back. So it is neat to think that potentially 2 generations from now, people will be watching it on whatever they want to watch it on and potentially still laughing at us, you know. And that's kind of cool to think that you could have not just an immediate impact on a generation, but also a generation down the road that when they get to be 25, 30, and they're having kids, and they show their kids, like, hey, oh, we used to watch this show back in the day. It's hilarious, you know. It's a very humbling aspect.
Exactly. And I think it's going to have that staying power. I just do because of the message that was inside of the show, each one of them.
And I hope it does, man, because, I mean, again, you know, like we covered, when we first agreed to do this thing, when Phil said, you know, if we can change one person's life, then it's going to be all worth it. And I hope that continues to happen, man. I just, you know, I hope we continue showing countries and cultures and all that it's okay to laugh. It's okay to argue with your brothers and your sisters. And at the end of the day, you forgive each other, you love each other, and you sit down and break bread. But, you know, and I hope that continues to go on from here until we're gone and, you know, until, you know, the good Lord calls us home.
You know, you talk about the show, and it was rough. It was stressful. It was hard work. You left on the weekends. Let's talk about Martin for a second, because Martin was newly married. And what was that life, you know? And we've talked about that before, but it had to be rough on a new marriage.
It was. You know, luckily I found one that she knew what she was getting into. So she had a very open mind about all of it. I spoke before, I put the cart before the horse and was like, you know, I told her, I was like, this thing ain't gonna last forever. You know, and she's like, cause there were times when, you know, she would just want to go out and be a husband and wife and go eat dinner and,
right,
you know, not exactly have any distractions and stuff like that. And when people would come up and, you know, at the middle of dinner, hey, you can take a picture. Of course, I'm going to say yes. I mean, I'm just never going to say no. You know, where she would get a little aggravated with it. And, you know, and me being naive, thinking it would eventually play out and die down, you know. And then when that didn't happen, we had a little, you know, she's like, I thought you said, I was like, man, I truly believe that would be the case. I had no idea that we'd still be dealing with this even to this day, you know. But we worked through it, and, you know, she always said, she said her favorite thing was to watch me take pictures with kids, because, yeah, I love kids. I mean, I just do. I enjoy the next generation, and I enjoy playing with them and messing with them and picking them up and throwing them up in the air, and, you know, it's just kind of the personality I've always had. So You know, I'd be quick to tell an adult no, but I'm never going to tell a kid no on anything. So, you know, if an adult walked up to me at dinner, I'd be like, hey, let's get there eating, then we'll do one. If a kid walked up to me, I was never going to not. I was like, all right, yeah, let's do it. You know, so, and she appreciated that. And she, you know, she was like, you know, that is just, she's like, man, that's awesome. But yeah, it was tough, man. That's why we had to start going. You know, we couldn't go the places we would want to go, or, you know, most people would go. We'd have to go do different things and, you know, go hide out for vacations and stuff like that, so we could really, you know, plug in and invest in each other's lives as a husband and wife should. So, but, you know, the good news is with all of our stuff and our speaking deals and all that, we include in our contracts and whatnot travel for two, so that we can take our spouse with us. And that way, you've always got them with you. Even if you're working, you're still communicating, hanging out, and growing as a couple. So that's been one of the coolest things about all of it, you know, is to take her along on a lot of this stuff where, you know, maybe if it hadn't been this way, stuff we'd have never got to do, you know. So that's been awesome. Right.
Now, with the show exploding as it did, you know, gosh, man, you guys opened avenues that never – I hadn't seen since I was a child. I mean, gosh, there were t-shirt sales, cup sales, and the company just exploded. And so, yep. All right, I'm not getting at the sales part of it, but the company expanded. And when the show started, let's just start from there real quick. What was your true position in the company when the show first started?
When the show first started, I was in charge of sponsorships and endorsements and stuff like that, and building duck calls. That's the only two things. So I made sure that we were in full compliance with our contracts, made sure everybody got the right products, and that, you know, trying to make Phil Robertson, make sure, basically keep him dressed in the right stuff and all that. And everybody else was pretty agreeable. He was always the one that tried to push back. Just to let you know, he was in control. But you know, that ornery old generation, how they don't want somebody younger than them controlling them at all. But that was it. That's what I did. You know, I didn't negotiate any of the contracts. I was just on fulfillment, basically, making sure we held up to our end of them. So, that was kind of what I did, and it was, you know, life was easy. Life was good.
All right, and the reason that I brought up the front end of this, all right, things go wild. Things go crazy. I mean, y'all expand like nuts. I mean, y'all are in gift shops, Walmart, everywhere. Everywhere there is something Duck Dynasty, Duck Commander.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look. So, all right, at the start of the show, Willie is kind of the CEO, the manager, president, or whatever of Duck Commander, right?
Yes. Yep, that's exactly right. Yep.
All right, can you tell me a little bit about the ladder? Because you're in a different position today from where you first started.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I think Jace always said it best. He said Duck Commander is not a place you come to climb a corporate ladder. It's more of a final resting spot. so the ladder didn't have many rungs on it in a family business. And so, yeah, at that time, Willie was what, CEO. Jace was kind of like operations guy. So basically, I just mean, hey, he was in charge of making sure we had the product built. And then me and Goblin were, you know, manufacturing and shipping and delivery and all that kind of good stuff. So basically, everything from building the duck call to getting it out the door kind of fell in mine and Goblin's lap. And then, so as the thing grew, we brought people in. We had to hire more people just out of necessity because we weren't here. I mean, we just simply were not at the office. Or, you know, when we were, it was just strictly to build duck calls and get them out. And we didn't have time to do all that. So we brought in Willie's other brother, Al, who worked for us for a little while, who's a preacher. He left his ministry position to come help the family business out. And then we had some other guys that we brought in, from some bigger companies that we were partnered with. And, you know, it grew. And another thing Jace always said, he compared it to, he compared us to Tiger Woods when he said, the fall will always be as epic as the climb. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was right, because when the plug got pulled on all those sales and everything, and, you know, everything had been force-fed and this, that, the other, then, I mean, we went from really high cotton to really low weeds, and it happened just straight down, basically. You know, there was no slope to the graph. It was straight up and straight down. You know, whereas a business, you hope it just kind of has a gentle slope up, you know, and then everything keeps growing, everything's good. But it had a rocket straight up and a boulder straight down. So that was, you know, kind of challenging to navigate, because none of us were prepared for the climb. And just as none of us were prepared for the climb, none of us were prepared for the fall either. So as the fall happened, you know, you do what you have to do as a business to stay viable, and you hate to do it, but you have to start laying people off. And some of that gets a little tricky, because it's friends and family and, you know, and stuff like that. And it's, man, it sucked. I mean, I hated being here a part of it. It's just not fun. Because you see a direct impact on people's lives, man, and it's not fun at all. But, you know, I don't remember who said it, but if you're going to be a leader, you can't be comfortable with having fun. So you've got to make those decisions and make those calls. Man, it never got easy.
It's heartbreaking.
It is. But luckily, you know, the good Lord blessed us with hiring the right people. And when you did have to do that, they understood. They were thankful for the opportunity. And it gave them valuable experience that probably otherwise, being in North Louisiana, they would have never gotten. You know, and same goes for me. I mean, I'd have never gotten it without that. So, you know, it's fine. It gives you, you know, but I don't ever want to be okay with it, being in any kind of leadership position, because in a way you feel like you failed your team, and, you know, you're like, man, if I could have just done this, I wouldn't have had to do that. And, you know, but some of it's just growing pains, man. And we had growing and shrinking pains. And, you know, we've come out, we survived it. You know, there's a lot of people that wouldn't, a lot of companies that maybe wouldn't have survived it, but, thanks to our core customer and the solid fan base, you know, we were able to survive it and weather it. And now, you know, we're actually back showing some growth, which is awesome. And, you know, trying to figure out how we're going to do this for the next 40 years.
Well, you moved on up. That's you moved on up, and you're now your title, I may get this wrong, operations manager?
Well, it's my title technically is general manager.
General manager.
Which I don't know what the difference in all that is. All I know is, you know, my job, Willie tasked me with taking it over. And, you know, he was, because when the general manager we had before me, great guy, not a duck hunter. But when you get back to the level where we are now, you've got to have somebody in this position that understands your customer and understands what you're after. It can't just be numbers and dollars, because duck hunting is so up and down anyway that you have to have somebody that does it to keep track with the trends and understand that, you know, last year we had a really, I'll tell just a little glimpse into how duck hunting works and a duck hunting business works. And I think a lot of these guys that own call companies that are on here can probably agree with me on this. So season before last, I had a really good duck season for the most part overall. Everybody was killing ducks. Everybody's happy. So that equals the store shelves after last hunting season being somewhat empty. So this year I had a really good sales year, right? Everything was good. Had to restock stores. Everybody's happy. Then you get this year. While your sales were up, duck season sucked. So you know what that's going to lead to next year? A lot of products still sitting on shelves from this year. So sales, it's always a year behind. Whatever happens, you're a year out from figuring it out. So this year our sales will be down, No, there's no doubt about it. They'll be maybe not down. They'll be flat. There will be no growth right. whatsoever, Sean. And hopefully you can keep it flat. Hopefully there's no downturn. And then hopefully this year we get a good year, and then next year sales will go back up. And it, but it's always a reactionary business. So that's just the way it is. So you have to be able to look at that and forecast that. And I just got through setting budgets, knowing that this year is going to be best case scenario flat. There's not going to be any growth, and it'll be flat. So when you're starting to have a budget, a whole company like we do with, you know, 20, 25 employees, and you look at your overhead and all that, you got to have somebody that understands, like, oh, pie in the sky would be 20% growth this year, but that's just not going to happen. I don't care what you do, not happening. So not when your lifeblood is duck calls. So, you know, you have to be fine with managing in that parameter of a budget with not any growth and figuring out how do we do this? Because you want to reward your employees, give them raises and do stuff like that for being here another year, for helping you grow. When all the time you know that this year you're not, your sales are not going to grow. They're just not. So, and if you don't have a duck hunter doing that, and you just have a perpetual guy that's just looking at growth and all that, then you end up getting on the wrong side of a budget. You know, you end up running like our country's running, where you're having to borrow money to run your company, and that's not a good thing. You don't have much viability. You start doing stuff like that. So, it's operating on a very lean budget, and, you know, a very lean and seasonal budget at that. So, you know, we do all of our business, and all of our checks come in from July to January, and then we're ain't much money coming in during January to June, but there's a lot of money leaving here.
Oh man!
So, I got a
crazy question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a core audience of Duck Commander. You know, going all the way back to, the mid-90s when some of the first cassette tapes started coming out?
Yeah, the first video came out in 87. So,
87. Wow.
So that peaked around Duckman 3 with the core audience. And so it was like 87, 89, 91, and then they were basically every year following from there for a while. So
there's a core audience that followed Duck Commander's every move. That
mm-hmm.
I call it the Mossy Oak effect. Guys from the South, there's always going to be a core audience that wears Mossy Oak and Realtree. They're not going to jump into Sitka just because they think and see and say that that's who represents them.
Yep.
Because they're from the South. Right. And see, I think that Duck Commander has that effect. Y'all had a core following that would not only want to be y'all, but they would blow or buy anything that you guys said. This is way before Duck Dynasty.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's a crazy question. So when Duck Dynasty came along and it became so pop, do you think any of that core audience left because of the pop feel around Duck Commander at that point?
I don't know. I don't know that they left. I do know, you know, from emails and stuff that happened back then that they did feel somewhat abandoned by us, which, you know, I hate. That's not at all how you ever want to do anything. You know, when we would get that, I would a lot of times personally try to reach back out to them and just, you know, let them know, like, guys, you got to, for this deal, you've got to see the bigger picture of what's going on here.
Purpose.
Yes, the duck hunting and the duck killing is always going to be there. That's who we are. It's bred in us. That ain't going away. But while we've got the nation's ears right now, to share the message of Jesus Christ, we're going to do it. And we're going to shout it from the rooftops. We're going to do it. And we'll circle back. We'll be back. We'll be back to doing what we were doing. Just while we have this platform and while everybody's listening and paying attention, let's do something bigger than duck calls. Let's do something bigger than duck hunting. And a lot of them would respond like, man, never thought of it like that. Keep rocking. keep doing you, you know, this, that, the other. Some of them are still like, yeah, but you're just forgetting about your core. And I'm like, man, trust me, we haven't forgotten. But right now we've got a different job. And our job is to take the platform that we've been given and do great things, hopefully, with it. And, you know, hopefully that we I like to think that we did that, and I like to think that we minimized the core that could have felt abandoned or left, and now we're regrowing that core. You know, the cool thing is, you know, even what we're doing now by living basically on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, you see our numbers continually rising. So this is not the Duck Dynasty effect. This is the Duck Commander effect, and this is us showing, guys, we never left. We were still doing it. We just didn't have a way to show you because of contracts that we were still doing it. Our hands were tied, and, you know, it is what it is. But I think overall we made the right decision, and we changed things for the better across not only the hunting community but just the country in general. And I'm okay with that. And anybody that wants to challenge me on that, I'm fine with you challenging me on it. And I'm open to listening to any and all opinions on it. But I think, I just truly believe that what we did was the best thing that we could do at the time, given what we were given. So I'm not going to lose any sleep over that. And if there's people out there that's got an issue with it, then you know what? You got to be offended by something. And if it's that, then so be it. But
staying power of what happens is going to be a long-term effect. It's going to be a long-term deal. I think it's going to be out there for a while. You know, Martin, as I look back on this whole series, you know, there's days that we went astray and hit with some of the most downloaded numbers there were. Some of those days we went astray. But as I look back across the whole series and think back to other podcasts that I've done with other people, and one thing that pops into my head that I always keep coming back to in this series with you, and always people asking, how do I get in the business? You know what I always think about now? I always think about the simple story that you told back in, I guess, probably November now, October, November, somewhere in there, about an opportunity. A door was cracked, and you busted that sucker down by somebody saying, hey, can you come up here and make some phone calls to Walmart, help us get back in Walmart? We've lost some of that foothold in Walmart. You didn't look at it as a job and, or got to go do this. You looked at it as an opportunity, and you just kicked the door off the hinges.
Yeah, man. We get that. We get fielded with that question a lot. Like, how do you get into this? And, you know, the number one thing that I tell people is if you want to chase something that you truly love, then it's going to take sacrifice. And for me, that sacrifice was the first few months I worked here, not getting paid a dime. Then once I started getting paid, that sacrifice was being on the road. Was Willie a lot. And there's certain people that just can't afford to take that chance, because if you're married and you got kids, and then your family has to come before your dream and your job. You have to do what you have to do to provide for that family. If you don't, then you're on the wrong side of life. Because when you took a vow to your wife, it was to provide for her, to honor her. And chasing a selfish dream is not doing that. And I'm sorry, and I hate to say it like that, but that's why you bust your butt in that. So when that opportunity does arise that you can step back and take that sacrifice and try to do it, then you're comfortable in doing it. You know, and I tell people that all the time. Like, don't abandon your family to chase a dream. Because that you're not that hole, or whatever you think that dream is going to fill, that ain't it. That's not what's going to fill that hole. That's just not it. Because I'll tell you what will fill that hole is peace of mind. And peace of mind is laying down every night knowing that your bills are paid and that your wife and your kids are taken care of. And But it will require you to do some sacrifice. And what it may do is require you to work a 40-hour job and then tinker with another 20 hours a week of doing, chasing your dream a little bit and making those sacrifices, but never forgetting who's at the house. If you're a young single man like I was, those sacrifices are a lot easier to make. Trust me. I mean, if I were where I'm at now with my wife and Mary, I couldn't afford to do what I did. I couldn't do it. Right now I just could not do it. You know, I'm super fortunate and blessed that I received that opportunity when I was young and single, and that I was able to get in there and work hard and, you know, live like my parents raised me. I'll make them wonder what they would do if you weren't there. That's my number one thing. If you want to climb at a company and you want to grow and do these things and do that and other, you go in there every day and don't make them, you know, make them wonder what life would be like without you there. Not worried about what it's like with you there. What would it look like if this person was no longer here? And so that's why when I got in here, I was quick to figure out how to do everything at this place. Like, I wanted to know how to build calls. I wanted to know how to ship. I wanted to know how to do the sales. I wanted to know, you know, this, that, the other. And, you know, you get in there, you make yourself valuable, and you get rewarded. And, you know, that's one thing that nobody, you know, in today's world, you know, you see it, everybody wanting somewhat of a handout to get started. Get out there and bust your butt, and it'll happen. It may not happen on your timeline. It's going to happen on the good Lord's timeline, but it'll happen. Hard work is still rewarded in this country. And you know, that's why I wake up every day, come up here with a smile on my face and try to take care of the 25 employees I got, try to keep every one of them a job and try to keep these lights burning and figuring out what we do next.
And, you know, that, like I said, that question just thumbs up so much. You couldn't put it any better. What would it be like without you? You make people wonder what it would be like without you. You know, that's a great way of putting that.
Yeah, make them wonder. If you walked in tomorrow and put in your 2 weeks' notice, you want them saying, what in the heck are we going to do? You know, you don't want to be like, oh, we can feel that. You want them to say, oh, my goodness, how do we get him to stay? You know, him or her. But that's something my parents put in me from a young age was, you know, even working at that sporting goods store, man, I learned how to do everything. I could drive the forklift. I could load fertilizer. I could sell guns. I could, you know, work on this. The only thing I couldn't do was take a bow and arrow apart and rebuild it. You know, but I learned how to do everything else there. And that's just what, you know, that's what I try to do everywhere I go, is try to figure out how to make myself valuable. And, you know, it is. It's rewarded. So.
Hey, Martin, I told you I was going to throw you a little curveball surprise question this week to end this thing. You know, one of the things I tell people when they ask me, hey, what's it like being on that podcast, Martin? And this is the case for most of the guys that's been on here. I can't say for one moment that we've gotten off the air or before we went on the air that, hey, don't ask me about this. I'm not going to talk about it. There's been full transparency with everybody, most of the guys that I've had on here. I'm just going to say most. But this is going to tear the curtain down. Crazy question. If you could go back and change one thing, what's the first thing when that question pops into your mind? And this is your whole life, not just a certain period of, you know, a certain set of time, but what would you change and what would you do different?
Oh, man, you know, golly. Yeah, you're right. What would I, let me just, and so I'm going to preface this by saying, I believe that everything happens just how it is supposed to happen. I believe that the good Lord's plan is perfect. And, you know, when you start looking at things and saying, boy, I wish I'd have done that differently. And, and this, that, the other, then you're fooling around with the plan that the good Lord had in place for you. With that being said, looking back on it, the one thing that I wish could have happened was that during the rise of all of this stuff, Duck Dynasty, Duck Commander, all that, I wish that we would have been able to stay a little more hands-on in our business without being so removed. And I say that because this brand was built off of 40 to 50 years of blood, sweat, and tears of Phil and Kay Robertson. And to think at a point when it come crashing down that it could have all gone away because of us being so busy, that just rips at me. It rips at my heart for them. It rips. Now, it didn't happen, but there was a point in here a few years ago where it got touch and go around here, just to be 100% honest, because the spending was outweighing the gaining. And that was just based off of employee size, product, and just all sorts of stuff that happened when I said growing pains. And to think that even with that meteoric rise, that fall could have been even more epic and we could have been out of business, turned the lights off, shut the doors, is incredible. And that's the one thing that I wish that the show and the success would have allowed us to do was stay more involved in our business without having to hire people to bring in and run it. Because in that, there were some very bad things that happened that were, you know, I don't like telling too much business and, you know, some of this stuff for legal
decisions,
reasons, but there were,
y'all
wouldn't that were
made.
Beyond our, yes, that were beyond our control, that were seven-figure bad decisions. And I'm not counting the decimal places in that. So, you know, there was a chain of events there that happened that got really bad for a while. Now, luckily, we got back involved, put our nose to the grindstone, and we weathered it, and we rallied, and we're back on the other side shining because of it. So that's why I say, when you say, what would you have done differently? Had those things not happened, we wouldn't be where we are today. We wouldn't have learned the lessons that we did. We wouldn't be tougher because of it. And we wouldn't be, you know, more knowledgeable because of it. We would still be, you know, riding around with rainbows and butterflies in our heads. So I preface all that by the plan. While it may not look perfect to humans, it's perfect in God's eyes. So he knew, I mean, he already knew all this was going to happen. If you truly believe in God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, then he already knew this was going to happen. And he knew how we would react. So I'm glad that he let us grow through that. Selfishly, I wish we wouldn't have had to go through that. If that makes any sense whatsoever, you know.
100%.
And so, you know, that's why I take so much pride in what I'm doing now, is I'm now in control of a brand that was here for 50 years and has been here for 50 years. And I don't want it to be gone after 51, 52, 53. I want this thing to go on in perpetuity. As long as duck hunting is still a thing and as long as people still love to chase these things, I want Duck Commander to be a part of that conversation. And that's, you know, that's why, you know, I get just fighting mad about it, because I'm like, man, if you only knew the things that went on behind the scenes to get this thing to where it is. And when you see people do you wrong, and you know, see people take advantage of people's kindness and grace and mercy, and you're just like, it gets at your core, man. And so I'm ready to take this ship and steer it for another 40 years, as far as I'm concerned, and keep this thing blowing and going and changing with the times, but never forgetting our roots and never forgetting what this thing was founded on. And that was a love for Jesus and a love for people. So, you know, that's why we're quick to help those in need and do everything that we can, you know.
Well, I think the right man is in that position to carry it for a while. So
I hope so, man. I'm just, you know, I learned back before this, the worst thing I can do is try to drive my ship. The best thing I can do is be the best first mate and let the good Lord drive it. You know, listen, try not to reach over and grab that steering wheel like when you're riding with your wife. And just let the thing go, you know, let your life be submissive and be obedient and just live life 100 miles an hour following him. And you know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to dance with the one that brought me, and, I'm going to keep on keeping on you know, hopefully keep doing things like this and just getting back in touch with everybody and, you know, letting everybody know, hey man, we're here for you. And we're here to fight the good fight for you and let our platform and let our voices help you fight that good fight. So, you know, hopefully others jump on board with that. We can all get on the same page as duck hunters and let's fight the good fight and make good changes for us as hunters and for our future and, you know, for the legacy of what it is.
I'd say this, Martin. I will definitely say this to end this, but I've never been more, let me make sure this word is right, frightened about calling somebody in my life about being on here, and never felt more at ease than I do when you're on here.
Oh man. Yeah. It's, you know, I think part of that comes with the platform that we were put on. You know, we get that from a lot of people, and then after they talk to us for about 5 minutes, they're like, man, y'all are just like what you show them. You know, you're just like what you, and I'm like, man, I tell you what, I don't know. In my other life, I tried to be two different things, and that was exhausting. It's a lot easier to just be one and be consistent.
You know. But it was just kind of, you know, because I guess you were about number 4 or 5 in the series, and through Bradley Ramsey, we got hooked up, but to call you and said, hey, man, can you dedicate yourself to doing this? And, you know, at the time, I think we had decided it was probably going to take 6 or 7 shows to do it in, but it ended up, I mean, we've done 20 now.
Yeah.
Probably 20 or 22. It's a lot. But you're like, yeah, I'd love to. There was no question from you about, all right, we can't talk about this, we can't do this, you know, I don't know if I can give you time on this. It was always, yep. And you're a busy man.
Yeah, but, you know, I tell you, I approach this with the same mindset that Phil had told us about this show. Like, if through this storytelling that, you know, we can help one person on either an eternal decision, you know, a life decision, a business decision, marriage, family. If one person listened to this thing and got the help and guidance, or, you know, we made them put something in their hum box, then it was worth it. Then all this time was worth it if we changed one person. I can tell you from the messages and all that I think we've changed more than one. If you believe what they send to you, which I do, I take everybody at face value unless you give me a reason otherwise. So then when you look at it, and when you look at things and look at people like that, then an investment of an hour a week for 15 or 20 weeks is minimalistic, man. And I think if we as people would invest more time in others of giving people an hour a week, then can you imagine the things we could do together if that were the case? And sometimes you can't. Sometimes life gets in the way. You're right. I'm busy. You're busy. And we're both handling our separate affairs that we have to do. But, you know, when you can, and even sometimes when it's like, God, we just got to squeeze this in, and we squeeze it in and make it work. When you can do those things, make those sacrifices, it just, you always come out on the other side way better than you went into it. And that goes with anything in life. So,
Martin, from the huge audience that we have had and have now listening to this podcast, thank you again. And thank you for me. I just appreciate you
doing
it.
My pleasure, buddy. Yeah, man, my pleasure. And I'm looking forward to, I'm also looking forward to going in the Hall of Fame and coming on the once or twice a month, because I tell you what, sometimes the once or twice a month is when we get to talk about the stuff that's a little more controversial and have a little fun, you know. And I like thought-provoking conversation. I really do. I like things that challenge me intellectually and spiritually and all that kind of stuff. So I enjoy those kinds of conversations. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to the next steps. And you know, for those listening, man, thank y'all from the bottom of my heart for listening. Hey, Rocky, thank you for having me on here. And keep the questions and all that coming, man. I'm an open book. I'm not going to just quit responding to stuff because this deal's over. So anything we can do, you just let us know if we're here.
So, Martin, thank you again. I really want to thank you. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckTalk.com.